Okay, we're going to tap of Mem Dalet Amud Aleph. We just left off with the Mishnah, the Machlokes between Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai, with regards to Shlichut Yad. Right, Beit Shammai required, said that in order to be over in Shlichut Yad, you just needed to have a Choshev to think about being Shaleach Yad. We saw from Rashi and Tosfos, the other is showing that it's not simply thinking about it. It has to be where you're articulating, you're giving intent, clear intent that that's what you're going to do. As opposed to Beit Hillel, who believes you actually have to take an action. Be the Shaleach Yad means literally you have to be Shaleach Yad. So Mara wants to know on top of Mem Dalet Amud Aleph, Menahanim Milit. Where do we know this from? The Tanur Rabbanan. Pasuk says, I'll call Dovar Pesha. So, all Dovar Pesha Beit Shammai Mim Lameid Shechayav Alamach Shava Kema'aseh. That it called Dabar Pesha, that you're chayav not only on with the action, but even the machshava. We saw before that Tosva said that machshava is dibur. And that action is dibur. So here you have a called Dabar Pesha, that you'd be chayav. And Beit Hillel, on the other hand, says, Omrim enu chayav, ad shishlach bo yad shenemar, im lo shalach yado b'melechet reyu. That's what it says in the Pasuk, shlo shalach yado b'melechet reyu. Amr lohen, Beit Shammai, the Beit Hillel. Beit Shammai says, Beit Hillel, hello, Kvar Ne'emar, Kol Davar Pesha. So you, Beit Hillel, what are you going to do with the part of the Pasuk that says, Kol Davar Pesha? I'm Rulam, Beit Hillel, Beit Shammai, hello, Kvar Ne'emar, Im Lo Shalach Yado, Im Lechet Reyu. Hey, Jimmy, we have our side of the Pasuk, so what are you going to do? Im Kain, Mal Tam Adomar, Kol Davar Pesha. According to Beit Hillel, what does it mean, Kol Davar Pesha? Shechol, Ein Li Elohu. I would have thought that for Shlichut Yad, the only one who could be Sholeach Yad is the Shomer himself. Amar le avdo ulu shlucho. If he says to his servant, to his agent, that they should go and be shaleach yad, meaning that he is responsible for that. Tamad lomar akol davar pesha. And anything, any instruction, he would be chayav. So this become another exception to the rule of ein shaleach ledvar aveira. So we experienced in Bava Kamma one of the exceptions we've seen before many times. Mi'ila is an exception to ein shaleach ledvar aveira. In Bava Kamma we saw that Toveach u'mocher is an exception. There we had limudim from the psukim that there is shliach dvar avera when it comes to Toveach u'mocher. And for here we have this other case, which is the case of a kol davar pesha, that if you use an agent for shliach u'tiyad, then it's also classified as shliach dvar avera. Now the second half of the Mishnah discusses the other issue, which is actually lifting up the chavit. How did you pour the wine? The person wanted to steal the wine. How did they pour it? They literally lift up the chavit, remove it from the other chaviot, or did he just tilt it over and pour from it? So the Gemara says, Amar Rabba, lo shano elish nishbira. That the only time when we say he's patur, when he simply tipped the barrel in order to get the wine out, but he never lifted it, right? He never made a kinyan on the barrel, he tipped it and he gets the wine out. Then we said he's responsible for the revi'at yayin that he took, but he's not responsible for the barrel that sustained damage afterwards. Aval, that's true if it breaks. Aval echmitzo mishalem et kula. If it somehow goes bad, the wine turns into vinegar, then he's responsible for the entire barrel of wine. Why? My taima. Gire didei hu dahanula. I mean that there's causation. As opposed to when he tips the barrel and he pours the wine, puts it back, when the barrel breaks, it shouldn't have any relationship to the fact that he tipped the barrel before. If the barrel broke, the barrel would have broken either way. So all he did was, the place where he did the shlichut yad was in taking the yayin, and there's kisaron kis. Over here, on the other hand, there is direct causation. The only reason the wine went bad is because now there's air in there, there's more room in there, or that he opened it, or his touching it. And there's direct causation between his pouring the wine out and the rest of the wine going bad. So therefore we say he's responsible not only for the wine that he poured out, but the remaining wine that went bad. Now, on the other hand, the other case is where he actually lifts the barrel out and then he takes the wine. There he's responsible not only for the wine, but even for the barrel. So Amar Shmuel, lo natal natal mamash. He doesn't have to literally have taken the wine. Given sheik biyad, he told, afapishin lo natal. As soon as he lifts it up with the intent to take the wine, then it's classified as if he's taken it. So similar to what we saw by the Shulchani, when he gives the money, as soon as he has the money in his possession, he becomes like a shoel on the possession. So it's over here. As soon as he picks up the barrel with the intent to pour the wine out, he becomes a shaleach yad, and immediately becomes chayav and all the unsin, even though he never actually gets to pouring out the wine. So Mar says, Lemikas Savashmo, shaleach yad, in a tzricha chisaram. So it seems from Shmuel that you don't require for shlichut yad, you don't require any deficit to be caused to the mafkid over here, because you simply are picking up the barrel itself is enough to classify you as a shaleach yad, even though you've never poured the wine out. I mean, if we require you at least to pour the wine out, then there's a chisaron, the wine that's missing. But over here, there's no loss to the mafkid. You picked up the barrel, you put it back down in the end. So, no, Imri, look, shiny hocha, let's say no. Why? It's different over here. The nechaled tahavi haichavit kula basis levihariviit. Why? Because the only way or the reason that you're going to get this revi'it out is because of the basis, the fact that the barrel and the wine underneath it are making it possible for you to remove the wine. And therefore...
So you don't have to pick it up, you don't really have to pick the whole thing up, you just have to tilt it a little bit for just to pour out.
Right, but no, if you tilt it to pour it out, then you don't need the, you don't, in a sense, you don't need
the...
What's
the nechaled?
The nechaled is that when he's picking up the barrel, that is giving him the access and the ability to take out the revi'it yain. So we're saying the reason that he's chayav on the picking up the barrel is not because he just picked up the barrel, but rather he picked up the barrel with the intent of pouring out the wine. And when he picked it up with pouring out the wine, the chisaron will be the revi'it, or would have been the revi'it yain that he was about to take. So Rashi says, if you look at Rashi chavit basis lai revi'it, she says, tishamer oto revi'it lo tachmitz. Right, that the rest of the barrel, the rest of the wine, is being shomer on the remaining part. That in general we require a chisaron. And with shlichut yad without chisaron does not exist. But over here, because a wine cannot be kept without it being in a kli, and without it being filled to the top, therefore he becomes a shoel on the other part of the chavit. Because in order to access his wine, or in order for his wine, the good revi'it, to be there, he needs the rest of the barrel, and he needs the rest of the wine in order to ensure that he gets there. So that it's not, because he intends to take that revi'it yain, it's not simply his lifting of the barrel that makes him chayav. It's his lifting of the barrel with intent to take out the revi'it yain that makes him chayav, because that revi'it yain will be the chisaron that causes him to be over in the shlichut yad.
When is it
right.
Because when he would be chayav
the gezel,
as soon as he picks it up.
Yad might be different, right? As okay. We said before, shlichut yad came to your hands with head there, yeah? So therefore, the only way to have shlichut yad, according to, right, we saw, according to Rova and many others, is that you need tzricha chisaron. Right? That you need some sort of loss or detriment to be caused, a deficit to be caused to the shomer. And the only way to have that is to actually take something and use it and remove it. Here, simply lifting up the barrel is not going to cause a chisaron, unless you say that the barrel somehow functions, right, as a vehicle for you to get to the wine, or the only way that the wine will be available to you. And it's because of that you'll be, right, chayav even on the barrel, even before you pour the wine. So Magar says, "Vay Ravashi, bia anarki litol himenu dinar, mau." When we say that a person lifts up a wallet in order to take a dinar out of it, what is the din? Right, chamra hu d'lo mintar elagav chamra. We're talking about wine, the residual wine, even though that's somebody's intending to take, at least serves a purpose with regards to the revit that he wants to take, which is that it helps it not to be machmitz. I mean, when they fill the barrels up to the top, that ensures that the wine will stay good, and the other wine, therefore, is acting as a benefit, or as ensuring that the revit that he takes is good. On the other hand, avazuza mintar, a zuz does not need the other zuz in order to be safe, meaning that the two are independent items. There's no correlation between one zuz and the other zuz. Oh, Dilma, shiny tiruta danarki, mini tiruta the dinar. Or maybe it's different. A single coin can easily be lost. On the other hand, a wallet full of coins, right, will not be lost so easily. It's more visible, it's easier to find. So maybe there is a benefit to the fact that this dinar is inside of the anarchy. So again, you have to question when he picks up the wallet, right, what is his, chiyuv now. Is this chiyuv simply for the coin that he takes out of the wallet? Or is it also for the entire wallet? Because the entire wallet serves a purpose with regards to the coin that he's taking. And if that's the case, when he lifts up the wallet, not only is he chayav for the coin, but he becomes chayav for the entire wallet at that point in time, because of his becoming a shoel on the wallet before he is sholeach yad in the coin. Right. Let's say at the end of Perek Hamafkid, and we start at Perek HaZahav. So Mishnah starts out Perek HaZahav, talks about, or discusses over here, what we know as kinyanim. Now kinyanim, the Gemara here is going to talk about different forms of metals, or different forms of coins, and their interaction or relative value one to the other. Because the reason here, what we're dealing with, is how do you make a kinyan on something or an item? When you purchase an item, how do you make a kinyan? You generally, we use either a kinyan chalipin, right? Or we use a kinyan mishicha, we use some form of kinyan in order to ensure that the person can't reverse the transaction. Now, when we have these types of kinyanin, they only work when you do a kinyan on metalkalin. Whereas if you do the kinyan on the money, they may not work midoraisa, or they may not work midorabanan, depending, right, if you hold like Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish, we'll see later in the Perek, doing the kinyan on the money itself will not function, will not work, in order to ensure that the transaction is irreversible. So now, the Mishnah will lay out different combinations, and in those combinations, they're going to determine yachasi, or the relative, which one is the money and which one is the metalkalin in these cases. So that's the first part. The Mishnah says this, kunetakesef. So when you deal with silver coins versus gold coins, right, we assume, this is the Mishnah assumes over here, that the silver coins are the money, and the gold coins are the metalkalin. Therefore, if you make a kinyan on the zahav, then you are kunetakesef. A kesef ain't okay at the zahav, but the other way around does not work. If you make a kinyan on the kesef, on the silver, that silver is coinage, right, is money, and that money will not function as a kinyan over the zahav. And the choshev.
Gold here means.
Gold coins.
That's gold, everything here is coins.
Coins so far, yeah. In the Mishnah, so far everything here is coins. And a choshev koneta kesef. Copper will be koneta kesef. I mean, if you're looking at prutot, look at copper coins versus silver coins. Silver coins will stand as the money again, will be the currency, and the nechoshet will be the metal tulim. Therefore, if you make a kinyan on the nechoshet, you are koneh the kesef, whereas if a kesef ain't a koneh the nechoshet. On the other hand, the silver does not function, does not serve, right, as a kinyan over the nechoshet, because the silver is the currency. Ma'ot ra'ot konot et yafot. They're about bad coins are koneh good coins. Now again, what exactly are these ma'ot that we're talking about here? Rashi says these ma'ot ra'ot are shenifsalu, that they were coins that are already out of circulation, that they were nifsalu because the machut changed, whatever reason, these coins are no longer in circulation, so they're koneh to yafot. Now, Tosa says, according to Rashi, why did I have to write that? It's obvious that ma'ot ra'ot are not classified as currency when you're talking about, right, regular coins or ma'ot yafot. So what type of chiddush is it that the ma'ot ra'ot are koneh the ma'ot yafot? So therefore, Tosfos describes ma'ot ra'ot over here as that they're usable still, but they're not widely accepted. And they're still good coins, but they're not coins that are used in all places or in all times. So therefore, ma'ot ra'ot konotet yafot, v'yafot enan konotet ra'ot. Again, when a relationship between good coins and either according to Rashi, coins that were nifsal, according to Tosfos, coins that are not as widely accepted, it's clear that the yafot are the currency here. So therefore, if you make a kinyan on the ra'ot, you can be kone the yafot, but not the other way around. Asimon kone the matbea. Rashi describes asimon here, same way he does in many other places. Rashi describes asimon as a coin without a tzura on it. It's a coin that's lacking sizes or uses of the coin, but it's missing the tzura, the stamp, right? The engraving of the coin that'll have the tzura on the coin itself. That's Rashi. And the Rabbeinu Tam here has an alternative shot. He says that a simon has a tzura on it, but it's not a tzura chashuva. That's what Rabbeinu Tam learns, that it has a tzura on it, but it's not a well-defined tzura. I mean, it has the right tzura, but not well-defined. You have to say it's a tzura, which isn't the right tzura that you need right now. So it's somehow that this matbea is subpar. Again, according to the Rabbeinu Tam, right? The Rabbeinu Tam's pshat runs into other problems later on in the Gemara, where it doesn't fit so nicely. You have to squeeze to fit it in. According to Rashi, it fits in much nicer. But again, over here, asimon koneh et matbea, the asimon, which is either a subpar coin, or it is a coin without the actual tzura on it. Reminds of the old days, the asimonim here in Israel. Right? They're tokens, which is a good term for them. They're tokens, not currency. So those tokens, if you make a kinyan on them, they work to koneh the currency. Whereas the currency cannot koneh them. Basically, what we've seen here is, this is the summary of everything we've seen here, is that currency cannot be koneh metaltalim. On the other hand, metaltalim can be koneh the currency. So what's the klal? The klal is, kol metaltalim konim zeh. When it comes to metaltalim, a peyrei can be koneh another peyrei. Meaning that if everything is metaltalim, then you can do a kinyan chalipin, you can have some sort of exchange, that the kinyan on one will automatically mean that the other is now nikneh, and there's both directions. Now Rashi over here, when he says, he says there are two ways to have this function. Right? It's not clear, one of them is clear to us. One is the kinyan chalipin, Rashi says, betorat chalipin, which is that when you merkone one of the objects, the other object goes into possession of the second party. Whereas he also says there's torat damim, that it's, there can be also a Torat Damim, which seems to be some sort of barter exchange. It's not clear from Rashi what this is, but it seems that if both sides value each object, right, and then there's an exchange on value, that also can be classified as some sort of Kinyan of Torat Damim. How this differs exactly from Torat Chalipin, or different from, right, a Kinyan of Kesef, that we'll have to see later on in the Gemara. Right, Kate said, how does this Kinyan of Torat Chalipin work? Mashach emenu perot, veno latan lo ma'ot. If he takes a kinyan on the payroll, here we have an exchange, you bought fruits from me. If you make a kinyan on those fruits, even though there's no money, the case is over. The transaction is over from the point that you lift up the payroll. On the other hand, if he paid, the buyer pays the money, but never makes a kinyan on the payroll, you can reverse the transaction here, you can, because the transaction is not final. Because there was no kinyan on the metalkalin. Aval, amru, misha param an shei dorav avo, umidorav laga, shem, who took retribution from those who acted in the dorav avo and dorav laga, and who acted inappropriately, who atili param, misha no made bitiburo. So there's a secondary consideration, which is, even though technically the kinyan is not gone through, or the transaction is not complete, nevertheless, once you paid money, there's an issue of Misha Para, which is more widely known as Misha Para, that a Kodesh Baruch, we say a person who does not keep their word, we hold accountable for not keeping their word, and we say Hashem should punish such an individual. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Kol Sheh Kesef Yado, Yado El Yuna. So here, Rabbi Shimon disagrees with the principle, but he says whoever is holding the money, right, has the upper hand, has the right to reverse the transaction. So that means that if the Lokeach goes and gives money to the mocher, we say according to the Tanakama, you could have reversed the transaction. Even Lokeach can reverse the transaction in this case. According to Rav Shimon, that's not the case. The only one who can reverse the transaction now is the mocher, the seller, because he has the money in his hand. Lokeach is done once he gives
the money. Is it
for the one who gives who doesn't have the money anymore? Meaning that for the one who paid the money, the Lokeach now cannot reverse the transaction because he's paid the money already. That's his gemira tadat over here. Whereas the mocher, who has the money in his hands and has the peyrot, he has the upper hand here, and therefore he could be yechzorbo. He could be choser on the transaction. Right now, matlinei Rabbi the Rabbi Shimon breaks. Rabbi taught Rabbi Shimon his son the Mishnah has zahav koneh takesef. Okay, like we have in our Mishnah, that zahav is the metaltalin here, and the kesef and the silver is the currency. So Amalei Rabbi, Shanita Lanu B'Yaldutecha, when you were younger, you taught us the Kesef Koneh Et HaZahav. Right now, you taught us the other way around, that the Kesef silver coins in relationship to gold coins, that the silver are the metalkalim, the Zahav is the currency. And now, later on, as you got older, you teach us the Zahav Koneh Et HaKesef. Now you teach us like what our Mishnah has. So he says, B'Yaldutecha says, B'Yaldutei Mai Savar, U'B'Ziknutei Mai Savar. What was the reasoning behind Rebbe's reversal of his position? And what was the original thought in his position? When he was younger, he thought, Davoch Tuchoshiv Havitiva. It's gold, which is the more significant, the higher value of the two. So therefore, it would be classified as the currency. Other than silver, which was in relationship to gold, of lesser value and of lesser significance, therefore it was the peret. And obviously, the metalkalim are koneh, the coin or the currency. So if you picked up the silver, you would be koneh, the gold. Later on in his life, he changed his mind. Silver, which is the readily available currency, that which is widely accepted and used. Right? That is the currency. Dava, the lo charif, Gold coins, which are maybe used to store value, but are not widely used as for transactions, have a perek. Currently, pay the tiva, and therefore, when you're kona the kes zahav, then you're kona the kesef. The zahav was the metalklin. Amar Ravashi ki yaldutei mistavro. Like the way Rabbi learned when he was young against our Mishnah is better or makes more sense. Why is that? Miktani, because in our Mishnah, this is what is written in our Mishnah, but also it was written, must have been written in Rabbi's Mishnah, which is the next part of the Mishnah. I understand, obviously their mission did not read a Zahav Kone et a Kesef, but rather a Kesef Kone et a Zahav. Now why is that a better way? Because the next part of the mission says, Anechoshet Kone et a Kesef. Then the Choshet, copper coins, Prutot, are Kone Kesef, right, Dinare Kesef. Iyamart Bishlama Kasfo the Gabi Daba Peret. If you say that when it comes to the relationship between gold and silver, that silver is classified as metaltalin, then have a Hainu, the Katani Nechosha Koneh Tekesef. That's why the Mishnah had to continue and say afterwards that with relationship between copper and silver, silver is currency. That silver changes its status, meaning it's all relative. Silver relative to gold is considered metaltalin, but silver relative to Nechoshet, relative to copper coins, is classified as currency. That's why the mission needs to write two different fofos. Exactly. Ella, Iyamart Kaspel, the Gabi Dava, Tibahabe. If you see silver in relationship to gold, is already classified as currency. Meaning that, Hashto, the Gabi Dava, the Choshet Mineh, when you're talking about gold, which at least has one issue that, or one area that it is more, better, or better than silver, which is that it's more valuable, and it's right, of higher, considered a higher class of metal. So therefore, over there, if you say already silver is classified as a currency, then Amar Tiba Abi, look, I mean, Nechoshet. When it comes to copper, now copper has nothing over silver. If you say Tiba Abi, the Gabi Nechoshet, Diu Choshet, Diu Chorif, Mibai, there is nothing that could make Nechoshet, you consider Choshet, Nechoshet to be currency relative to silver. It has nothing over silver. It's not more valuable, and it's not more in usage. Right, Samara says, Itzrich. No, the Gemara says, no. Even our Mishnah, who writes it as Zav Kone to Kesef, like Rebbe in his older age, Salkadat Chamina, I would have thought, Hane Prite Be'atro Desagye, Inu Charifi Tve Mikaspo. There are some cities where Prutot, Nechoshet, are readily available. I mean that type of coin is so extant or so in use that it becomes the currency, it becomes the default currency. Ema Tivabi. So maybe I would have thought, now this would be. That's what you were saying, that there is a reason to believe that copper could be a currency, because there are places where copper does become a better currency. But here, there's a logic to it, because the currency, the choshet, because of its, it was so plentiful, it becomes the currency over there. That is unique to certain locations. It's not a general principle in the choshet and in coins. And therefore, it's not a general principle when it looks in relative to silver. Silver is coinage everywhere, or currency everywhere, as opposed to Nechoshet, which is only currency in locales or certain smaller locations. Even in those locations, it qualifies that the silver is the currency, or is the going currency, because we look at the wider usage of silver versus copper. Right? Vapra b'chiyah silver davati b'avi. B'chiyah also held, like Ravashi, who says that it makes more sense that gold is the currency. So to over here, Rav Chia says that gold is the currency. How do we know this? The Rav Osip Dinaremi brought it to Rav Chia. Rav borrowed gold coins from the daughter of Rav Chia. If you remember, Rav Chia is, right, Rav Chia is Rav's uncle. So he's borrowing money from his first cousin. He's borrowing this money from his first cousin. Lusof Iyakor Dinari. After a while, the Dinarim went up in value. As the Kameh to Rav Chia. So Rav came before Rav Chia and asked, how do I pay her back? So I'm like, Zil Shlim La Tabin Vitakilin. Right, so go and pay her the coins. Go and pay her the coins. So now, what's the problem with paying coins versus not paying coins? So I'll explain to you, the Gemara's going to say it in a second, but I'll explain to you there's a difference in borrowing. The Gemara later on is going to talk about problems of rebate, problems of interest. Now, when it comes to coins or currency, if you borrow in a currency and repay in the currency, they can never be rebate. So if you say you borrow in shekel, or you borrow in dollars, if you borrow in shekel and pay back shekel, then, or if you borrow dollars and then pay back in dollars, there can never be rebate because you're giving back the exact same currency and coinage that you borrowed. There's no, the value of the currency might have changed relative to other currencies, but in itself, if you look at it in a vacuum, you're paying back exactly what you borrowed. It doesn't look like rebate. Whereas later on, the Gemara is going to discuss something called sa'ah bisa'ah. Right, a sa'ah bisa'ah is if you exchange metaltalim or objects that are not currency. If you borrow an object and then you return the object, and the object is worth a lot more money when you return it. That is mechzek ribit. It looks like ribit. Because if you look at the monetary value of what you borrowed versus the monetary value of what you're returning, it's the value has now gone up, and it looks like you've charged him for that. That you've actually paid extra in order to have the money loaned to you. So, for instance, if today you were able to go right to the, you go down to the makolet and you buy milk, and someone wants to borrow milk from you, and today it's worth, it costs 5 shekel to buy the milk, and when you return it to them, it costs 7 shekel. So if you had him take a bag of milk today and hand him back a bag of milk when the price is higher, that is what mechzek ribit looks like ribit, and you're not allowed to do that. You do not have to return the milk, you have to return the original value that you borrowed, otherwise it's mechzek ribit.
So in other words, you didn't borrow a liter of milk, you borrowed
5 shekel. Very good. Exactly. So now, look at this. Over here, what did Rav Chiya instruct Rav to do? Go back. He said that the coins went up. Relative to dinarei kesef, the dinarei zahav went up in value now. So now, depends how you look at the gold coins. Right. If the gold coins are currency, then Rav Chiya says then pay back. Give the currency back, you give back the coins. If you look at dahabo, if you look at gold as being metaltalin, then that becomes sa'ab bisa'ah. Because now when you're paying them back, you're not paying them back, right?
You're not paying them gold, you're paying them...
The value of the silver, which is much higher now. So that's what they say over here. Iyamar pishkoma dava tiba'abe, if you say that gold is a coin, shapir, works well. Iyamar tpeira'abe, if you say they are metaltalin, havale sa'ab bisa'ah asur. That is exchanging merchandise. And when you exchange merchandise, I mean, if you take merchandise today and return later on, and the value has changed, gone up, that is a sur. That's classified as a sacred beat. Mar says, no, there is one exception to sa'ah b'sa'ah. Rav, dinaru havalei. That Rav, if the person who's borrowing the item actually has in his possession that item, then we don't classify it as borrowing and then returning the sa'ah, because he could have returned it today. He has available to himself the same item. Since he has available to himself the same item now, immediately for return, we don't look at it as if there is a problem that he's borrowing the item today and only repaying it back after a period of time, and that looks like it was a loan that was given back. Over here, he could have returned it immediately. His choice to return it later, right, is his own, that's his own decision. If it's his own decision to return later, we're not worried about him borrowing the object and returning the object later because he has the ability today to return the object. So now, we gave on to have a ludina, right? Nasek omerla, it's as if he said to her, Hilvini achiyuvobini, o achiyemsev mafteach. So you lend it to me until my son comes back or I get the key to the house, they're locked up in the house. So I can return the item to you. I mean, that he's not borrowing in the sense that he's borrowing for the long term the object, right? And saying, okay, I'll pay you back the object because he can monetize. I mean, he can monetize the object right away because he has the object in his house. So he's not, the object itself is not what's important to him right now because he has such an object. It's just a matter of convenience that he can have it now. It's accessible to him now.
He's not subject to the fluctuations of the market.
Right. Because he owns it himself and therefore the market price goes up. He has it in his house and we don't classify that as being vivid. Right. So what is it? Amar Rava. Hai Tana Savar, Dava Tivahabi. So Rava says, this Tana, the one we're about to read about, holds also that gold is coinage or currency. The Tanya. Pruta Shamru, now the price is going to go through a different coinage, and what's their uses? Pruta Shamru, Echad Mishona Bisari Talki. So this is the Gemara in Kiddushin, right? Mishnah in Kiddushin. That the Pruta that we're talking about, that we classify, what's the Pruta that's known in the, is used for Kiddushin? That is Echad Mishona Bisari Talki. It's 1/8. Of a Italian isar, my nafkamina. What's a nafkamina to know that what that is? The kedusha isha, right? That's to know that that's what you can use in order to generate kiddushin. Isar echad mi'asrim ve'arba b'dinar shel kesef. Isar is 1/24 of a dinar shel kesef, of a silver dinar. The my nafkamina. The mekach umemka. Rashi explains the mekach umemka is over here, is how do I know there's ona on the exchange? If you exchange the two coins, what's classified as ona? This is the exchange rate. 1/24 is the exchange rate. If you exceed that exchange rate by more than a sixth, then you're violating the ona. Tosa says it's not about what Rashi says over here, whether the exchange rate is there ona in the exchange rate based on this fixed exchange rate. Rather, Tosa says what happens if the exchange rate moves? I mean, over here we're saying an isar is 1/24 of a dinar. So now he lends you, right, the person lends you a isar, and then somehow the exchange rate changes. And when you pay him back, if you pay him back in dinarim shel kesef, how do you pay him back in dinarim shel kesef? It's moved. That's what it says. Right, that he sold the mechabdalah something for 24 yisarim, when 24 yisarim actually equals one dinar kesef. V'charkach zol, they went down in value, v'yala midbelet dinar. And afterwards, now it costs 32 dinar to buy a kesef. Yachol liftor atzmo mechabdalah yisarim. He doesn't have to go back now and pay 32 yisarim. He can actually pay 24 yisarim. Lamar dinar hu diyakir. He could say, no, the silver coin went up in value. Yisarim, I'm doing komon. You can't say, oh, you know what? Oh, the silver fluctuated in price. My Yisarim, they stayed static. No, Ella, you take those in our kesef.
The shekel stays.
Right, exactly. So that's it, the point here. The kesef is the standard. That's what the Mishnah is saying over here, this Bryce is saying over here. The kesef is the static currency, and everything is relative to the dinar kesef. So you can't claim that it's the kesef money and the Yisarim are static. But my nafkamina, okay, dinar shel kesef, echad mi'esrim v'chamisha b'dinar shel zahav. A silver dinar is 1/25, right, of a dinar of gold. That's the relationship between them. The main nafkamina, the pidyon of ben. The nafkamina is for a pidyon of ben. Why? What's the pidyon of ben in the Torah? Pidyon of ben is 5 shkalim. 5 shkalim are equal to a shekel. Is equal to a shekel min haTorah is equal to a sela in the Medina. Sela is 4 dinar kesef. Sela is 4 dinar kesef. You have to pay 5 kesef. That means 20. Kesef, right? 20 kesef will buy you or a pigeon of ben. That's the equivalent to what the Torah requires of you, 20 dinari kesef. But that means if you have a relationship between dinari kesef to dinari zahav, which is if you have 5 dinari kesef buy you 1 dinar zahav, if you hand a dinar zahav to the Kohen to be podet, your child, then he must hand you back change of, right? He has to hand you back 5 dinari kesef change. Because you're only chayav to him 20 dinari kesef. So if he hands you 1 gold coin, you hand him back 5 coins. Now, Iyamart Bishlama Tiva Habe, if you say there, right, that Tiva Habe, that it's a currency, Misharatana Mimida Dekaitz, then that price is explaining something that is in a static amount. The gold coin is the standard by which we measure currency. If the silver fluctuates, right, that's the silver fluctuating in relationship to the Dinar HaZahav. And then a single Zahav, right, coin of Zahav, I'm entitled to get back 1/5 of its value. Right, so now, is it always that 4/5 of the gold coin is Pidyon HaBen, and 1/5 is my change? If gold is the currency, then all I have to say is, listen, I gave you a gold coin, hand me back 1/5 of its value, because 4/5 of its value is the payment in the Torah. On the other hand, if I think silver is the standard, then I gotta look at how much the exchange rate is, and based on that I have to come back to what is 20 silver coins, and how much gold is that, and then I can only give you the change based on that relationship.
Maybe that was no change.
Right, depending on what that relationship is now. The fact that the price over here says that the gold coin always, 4/5 of a gold coin always buys you pigeon of Ben means what's been established as the currency? Gold is established as the currency over here. So that's it. So there, Iyamar Pishkumativava Mishayar Tanavi Midekites. That means that you get 1 coin. So therefore, if you have different examples, say that a gold coin is worth, if it's worth 25 gold, silver coins like in the Braisa, you'll get back 5. If it's worth 20 silver coins, then you'll be entitled to 4 back as change. If it's worth 30, right, silver coins, you'll be entitled to 6 back as change, because all we're looking at is the 4/5, 1/5 relationship between the gold and the silver, because the gold is the standard by which you buy the get the pigeon of Ben. The other hand, Eliyamar Peira Hafe Mishayer, right? Tana permitted to Okir Basil. How could you be that Tana says, oh, just pay a gold, 4/5 of a gold coin is always your pigeon of Ben? But if the currency is the silver, that's the static, right, amount, and that means that gold is fluctuating relative to silver. How could you always say 4/5 of a gold coin is, right, is a pigeon of Ben? That's not true. Depends on what the relationship between silver and gold is. Mar says, Zimna and Mahadele Kanav, Zimna the Mosifle. Right? Sometimes the coin is going to give him change, and give him too much change. Or Zimnin, right? The Mahadele Kanav, Zimna the Mosifle, you the Kanav. Sometimes the coin will give him too much change, sometimes he'll give too much to the coin. It won't work. From this price, it looks like gold is the currency, and not silver.
That's like when he was.
That's what like Rav Chiya said. That's like the Rebbe in the Al-Dutay. And all of them that seem similar. And Rav Ashi also said that made more sense, that the gold is classified as the currency over here. So now the way Rashi learned it here is that each section of the Mishnah looks at relationship between the other money. Now what is classified as the currency versus the other part of the Mishnah? Tosfos is less, doesn't like that as much. And he wants to explain to the Mishnah this way, that Hachi Perusho, Pruta Echad Mishono Isar. Ube Eze Isar, what Isar we're talking about? That's the Isar that Yesh Bedinar Kesef 24 Isar. And that, right, Isar that has one, that Isar is exchanged for Chafei Dinar, right, for 25, that 25 of those Kesef, Dinari Kesef, then exchanged into Zahab. Vashta Kulu Mishar Bedinar Shav Zahab. So that's what Tosfos says, that not that each piece here has a relative part to another piece of the currency, but what the price is doing is everything's relative to gold. Because what it's doing is going through an exchange rate that moves until we get to gold, and then gold becomes the standard. And that's the stuff that is fixed, and everything's relative to gold. So gold becomes the gold standard by the currency, and everything's measured relative to gold down the whole brisa. Suppose the Rashi was looking at it, each section as being relative to the other, one of them is the standard, one of them is the fixed currency, and the other one is the fluctuating currency. Over here, Tosfos says none of them are really fixed currencies. The only one that is a fixed currency is gold over here, and everything is relative to gold here. Rashi says gold is the standard over here from the last case of the silver to gold exchange, and the fact that he uses gold and says it's always 4/5 of a gold coin, that's what makes it that gold is the standard. Tosfos says it makes it even better. No, but the way the price reads is that everything's being exchanged, but then we get to gold and there's no more exchange. And since that everything was being relative to the next, until we got to gold, that sounds like gold is the standard. Tosfos also makes a point. Ben Otam makes this point everywhere. When there's an exchange rate there, that gold to silver is 1:25. Right? So since it's 1:25, the Ben Otam says we never found such a differential in gold to silver value. If you took an ounce of silver and you took an ounce of gold, the relationship of 1:25 is too extreme. He says, I don't know. He says, in our day, it's 12.5 is the differential in the price. Right, and to suggest that the price differential should be as high as 25 times is, he says, it's unfathomable that you could have gold to silver in that relationship. And I mean, today it's even smaller, right, than 12.5. So he says that he can't be. So the Rabbeinu Tam everywhere, this comes up in Shas, always comments that it must be that the gold coin was a different size than the silver coin. In order to compensate for that differential, it wasn't that they were the same size dinar. It is, by weight, but it wasn't the same size dinar. But the dinar Zahab was a bigger dinar Zahab. It was thicker, it was heavier.
You're saying it wasn't a
1-to-1 ratio. A 1-to-1 ratio in weight, right. And that the gold coin is much bigger, so obviously what does Rabbeinu Tam do? He says it was 2 times the size of the silver coin. 5% is 12.5, which is what about where it was in their day. But his point is that we're not dealing with coins of equal weight, equal size, because otherwise the relationship seems too wide or too big. He says, versus in our day, when it's 12.5, it could be that it was 2 times the value. So he says that it only makes sense if you say that there were different sizes in the coins. But we have a Mishnah. This is a Mishnah in Maaser Sheni. Mr. Maaser Sheni, one is allowed to redeem their fruits in order to bring that money up to Yerushalayim. Now what happens if one wants to consolidate their money? I mean, if you think about it here, if you use silver coins as the going currency, and you go and exchange your fruit into silver coins, now you have a lot of silver coins going up to Yerushalayim. Now, if I want to take those silver coins and then consolidate them into a larger coin, because it would make it easier for me to carry up to Shalim, am I entitled to do such a thing? So, Beit Shammai Omrim, Lo Yaseh Adam Slaim Dinarei Zahav. You can't take your silver coins and then exchange them into gold coins. Ubeit Hillel Matirim. And Beit Hillel says it's Mutar. Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, right, argue about what is the case. Chad Amar Machloket B'Slaim Al Dinarim. The only question here is the silver coins, right? When we're talking about here, Slaim al Dinarim. The Beit Shammai Savrei Kasva Tiva, Udahava Peret. Right? Beit Shammai thinks that Kesef, silver, is classified as the currency. Udahava, and gold, is Peret, is Metaltalin. Betiva, a Peret, lo Mechalalin. You can't exchange money outside of Yerushalayim. You can't take your money and then put it onto fruits and take the fruits up to Yerushalayim. No, you take the money and then you buy the fruits inside of Yerushalayim. Beit Hillel Savrei, Beit Hillel holds Kaspa Pere, that Kaspa is considered the Metaltalin, Medava Tifa. So that means when you exchanged it originally, you only exchanged into silver. At relative to Perot, silver is definitely currency. Right.
You couldn't do it.
Right. But now you want to exchange the kesef into zahav, kesef turns back into peirot, and relative to zahav, zahav is the currency. Right. So exactly, peirot v'dahavo tiva, peirot tiva mechalolin. So therefore you can be mechalol in zahav. According to one of them, machlokes being betel, but Shemai is exactly our question here.
Why would you say it was makdam? They said it's both.
You can't do that. It doesn't work. You know, the only way you can exchange my sasheni is to place peirot onto currency. Right? About peirot al dinarim, divrei hakol mechalolin. Everybody agrees that you can be peirot on dinarei hazahav, which is what you're asking, that gold otherwise is classified as a currency. Relative to anything else, gold is currency. It's only right relative to silver where they have a machlokas. Right, my time, mida dahava a kesef, the beit hilal. Right, just like kesef to beit hilal. Kesef to beit hilal, I've got the kaspa, even though silver is coinage, right? The gabi dahava peirave. Relative to gold, it's not classified as, right, as currency. So you can change. The gabi peirave, tibave. On the other hand, when it looks at other peirot, it's classified as currency. Zab nami the beit shamai. So to gold to beit shamai. I've got the dahava, the gabi kaspa peirave. Gold relative to silver, according to Beit Shammai, is classified as metalkalin. Nevertheless, I mean, the gabe periti babe. The gabe other metalkalin is classified as a currency. That was what you were asking before, yes. So here you have that currency. Coins will always be classified as currency when they look at relative to payroll, a real metalkalin. On the other hand, when it comes into a relationship between other coins, are we going to question whether they're considered currency or not? Mechadamar, the other one says no. After payroll, dinarim machloket. That even on dinar ezahav, peirot on dinar ezahav, they have machloket, meaning there's a question whether gold is currency whatsoever. Why? To the man damer after peirot on dinarim machloket, according to one who says that even on dinar ezahav it's machloket, ad miflag ebislaim on dinarim, then why argue about silver onto gold? Miflag peirot on dinarim. They could argue about just putting fruits onto gold, whether gold is classified as currency or not currency. So if with peirot on dinarim, had they argued just about peirot onto dinarim, hava mina hanimele peirot al dinarim. I would have thought that's only when you put fruits onto gold, it's not classified as currency. But b'slaim al dinarim, motele beit hilal le beit shamai, that even beit hilal will agree to beit shamai, that gold is classified as peirot, and not as currency. So the dava le gavi kaspo peirot, that gold relative to silver is classified as, right, is classified as peirot. Ave velo mechalon, and you can't be mechalal, kamash velon, the beit hilal who says that, right, gold, silver to gold. Gold is classified as a currency. Thinks that it's currency,
even compared to
silver, it's a currency. Not just compared to payroll, but even compared to silver, that it's a currency. So now it says tistayim. Let us conclude. The Rabbi Yochanan who the Amar ein mechalin. Rabbi Yochanan must be the one who says ein mechalin. The Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Usur levot dinar bini dinar. You're not allowed to borrow a coin against a coin. Dinar demai. What are we talking about here? Ilein about dinar shel kesef, dinar shel kesef, v'gabei nafshei. And that silver coins relative to themselves. He says, "Miikol l'madamar la'tiva avi." Who in the world would say that silver is not currency? Everybody agrees that dinar and kesef are currency. So if I borrow one dinar and I return one dinar, it has to be that I'm paying in monetary means. It's not that I'm exchanging sub. So there, nobody would say one for one is classified as mechzek rivit. Elav shita must be dinar shel zahav. Bidinar shel zahav. Must be it's exchanging one gold coin for one gold coin. Ulaman, according to whom? Either Beit Hillel Hamrei Tivavi. Beit Hillel already said that gold is currency. Right? Gold is currency no matter what. Gold is classified as currency. Both according to the Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish, both of them say Beit Hillel feels that gold is currency.
Why should be
Ella? Right, so why should it be also to exchange? El Alav Beit Shammai. Must be according to the one who says that it's Beit Shammai, but the one who says that Beit Shammai holds gold is Peira, even relative to itself, it's considered as Peira. And therefore, Shvamina, Rabbi Yochanan Udamar, Ein Mechalalim, right? So that Rabbi Yochanan must be the one who says, like the second way we explained it. The second way we explained it is that Beit Shammai argues even in the case of gold relative to Peirot, that gold is not considered currency. And there, Rabbi Yochanan is the author of that position, because that's the only way you can come up with the possibility that Rabbi Yochanan believes it's asur to land gold coins against each other. The only way it would be asur to land gold coins against each other is that they're sa'a bisa'a. The only way they could be sa'a bisa'a is if you believe gold coins are not currency, they are payer. Right, they're never currency. That's only going to the second way we explained the machlokas, which is that the machlokas between Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai is even by the gold coins themselves relative to payroll. Are they classified as currency or not classified as currency?
Objectively not considered currency.
Right.